From 1990 to 2006, Mark Harris worked as a writer and editor covering movies, television, and books for Entertainment Weekly, where he now writes the Final Cut back page column. He has written about pop culture and for several other magazines as well. His latest book is Five Came Back, a story of Hollywood and the Second World War. He tells the untold story of the extraordinary wartime experiences of five of Hollywood's greatest and most legendary directors, all of whom put their stamp on the war and were changed forever by it. Again, the title of the book, Five Came Back, A Story of Hollywood and the Second World War. Mark Harris, welcome back to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you here. So the five directors, John Ford, George Stevens, John Huston, William Wyler, Frank Capra, how did you come to these five men and to this particular concept?
Well, to the particular concept, I've always been really interested in film history, and I became aware as the years went on that World War II film history was something I'd always kind of avoided. You know, if for these five guys, if you look up their credits on IMDb or something, it's the gap in their resumes. You suddenly see 4 or 5 years where they didn't make, you know, any of the movies they're best known for. So I thought, you know, how interesting it would be to explore what their wartime experience was, how deeply into the war they penetrated, and how much it changed them, and also how much their work changed American perceptions of the war. And as for the five guys, you know, it just emerged really naturally because they were five of the biggest directors in Hollywood at the time. They were the five directors who did the most in the war itself, who had the greatest positions of authority and responsibility and did the most creative work. And they also all knew each other. Some of them were friends, some of them were rivals. So I realized that if I told their stories, I wouldn't be telling five separate stories. I'd be telling, you know, one big story with five main characters.
What makes the stories of these five stand out? I mean, I assume that they were not the only five, right? I mean, there were other people who obviously who were affected by the war. So these five of obviously huge names, but were there people that you left off the list, or there people you would have liked to include it, or?
No, there really weren't people I would have liked to include because, I mean, you know, I thought, at one point I sort of tested and thought, do I take it up to six? Do I take it down to four? In terms of taking it down to four, there really was no one to cut because, you know, what these five guys together did allowed me to take readers of the book to Washington, to the Battle of Midway, to the Battle of the Bulge, to D-Day, to Dachau, to North Africa, to Italy. You know, they really together were pretty much on every front in one way or another in World War II, and also the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force. There was no one of their stature in Hollywood to add to the list, and their stature in Hollywood actually mattered because it had an impact on what they did and how much authority they were given to film the war itself. You know, these guys weren't drafted. They were all men in their 30s and 40s who were recruited by Washington and the War Department and were asked to accept officers' commissions with the specific mission of you know, with a lot of latitude to figure out cinematic ways to bring the war home to the American public.
When it comes to the impact the war had on these artists, how can you see it? How much do you have to read into it, and how much of it is overt?
You mean on their work after the war?
Yes.
You know, I think that's a great question, and it's both, really. I mean, you can certainly look at John Ford's westerns, and if you want to read in his fascination with, for instance, the nobility of defeat, which is a theme in a lot of his westerns, you can absolutely see some of his war experience. In other ways, it's more overt. I mean, George Stevens was a great director of comedies and musicals and light fare before the war, he is the director of these five who filmed the atrocities at Dachau, and said after that that he could never make another comedy. So, you know, in his work before the war and after the war, you see such a profound divide between, on the one hand, films like Swing Time and Alice Adams, and on the other, films like The Diary of Anne Frank and A Place in the Sun, that it almost seems like the work of two different directors. So that's a place where it's really manifest. And then you have a guy like William Wyler, who explicitly took his war experience and poured it onto the screen in The Best Years of Our Lives.
When it comes to the, because again, you talk about the people that you chose, but then there are also, you write very explicitly about certain films as well. Were there some films that you feel were very emblematic of their work and of their experiences?
Well, I think certainly if you look at Wyler's movie, Mrs. Miniver, which was a movie that was actually shot in Hollywood both before and just after Pearl Harbor, and it was a movie about a British family suffering through the horrors of World War II, and was meant to sort of be a stirring portrait of national unity. If you look at that movie and then the much more realistic and specific The Best Years of Our Lives, which he made 4 years later after he himself had been in the war, you see a kind of profound growth and deepening of his understanding of what war was all about and what the cost of war was.
The idea that many of these filmmakers were there making documentaries at the time is really fascinating. Talk a little bit about that process and how certain directors like John Ford and John Huston were making not just documentaries but very important documentaries.
Yeah, it was a really complicated thing, a complicated and in some ways counterintuitive idea for General Marshall, who was really behind all of this, to decide that Hollywood filmmakers who specialized in entertainment and in fiction were better equipped to make the war vivid to the American public than documentary or newsreel filmmakers were. And, you know, they're different filmmakers grappled in different ways with how to reconcile their job, which was to sell the war and to bring good news to the American people, with their instinct, which was to tell great stories but also to tell the truth. So you have everything, like in John Huston's documentaries during the war, you have everything from this movie, The Battle of San Pietro, which was acclaimed as an unprecedentedly realistic portrait of the ground war in Italy and was in fact entirely staged, to, on the other hand, something like Let There Be Light, which is his documentary about psychologically scarred soldiers in a military hospital, which the beginning of which is so realistic about the pain these men went through that the film was suppressed for 35 years. It wasn't shown publicly until 1981. So they all went through their own journeys in terms of, dealing with how much of what they would film and would show would be real and how much would not be real.
And then is it different? Right. I mean, because that's a really interesting thing of then saying, okay, this is a documentary. This is what happened. This is real. And then to take that and synthesize it, process it, and then put out works of art that in some way allow you to have your artistic interpretation of what happened.
Right. I mean, I don't think that they were honestly thinking very much about artistic interpretation while they were in the service. I mean, it wasn't like they were sort of prima donnas saying, you know, but I want it to look more beautiful. They were, if anything, interested in getting closer to the action than sometimes the Army wanted them to be. George Stevens was very, very frustrated at being in the rear of the battle a lot of times and sort of took it upon himself to move to the front. But on the other hand, they were filmmakers and certain instincts took over. You know, Stevens left the American unit he was traveling with at one point and jumped over to the French army because he knew as they were proceeding through France that the French army was going to get to Paris first, and he really wanted to film the liberation of Paris. But once he got there to film it, he actually made the surrendering general and the victorious general restage the surrender a second time because he didn't like the light the first time. So he moved them outdoors, made them do it again, and that surrender, the second fake surrender, is the surrender that everybody ended up seeing around the world in newsreel footage.
Well, the name of the book is Five Came Back, A Story of Hollywood and the Second World War. And ultimately, what do you hope people get out of the story of these five men?
I hope they're engaged by the profound depth to which movies can make a difference. You know, we're in an era now when we take a lot of what is on film for granted. You know, we don't think a great deal about the sacrifice it takes to get footage and to make something real for the American people and to bring it home for the American people. And we certainly don't associate news footage and reality footage with the work of our greatest filmmakers. So what I hope people get is, you know, a chance to look at, you know, one of the central American industries at a moment of great crisis when the stakes couldn't be higher, and filmmakers really, by and large, rose to the challenge.
Mark Harris is the author of the book Five Came Back, A Story of Hollywood and the Second World War. It is published by Penguin Books. Mark Harris, thank you very much for being with us and sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Again, Five Came Back, published by Putnam, by Mark Harris. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.